Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do they really know? Every week, me, Jason Carty,
and me, Stephen Cockcroft, the Beatle Brains of Ireland, go here, there and everywhere, taking a forensic deep dive into the story of the greatest band of all time, the Beatles.
Come with us every week on a magical mystery tour as we talk albums, singles, solo careers, books, films, and so much more.
Become a member of Nothing Is Real on Acast Plus today for ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more, because happiness is a warm podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Nothing Is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do they really know? This is part two of our discussion on Wings 71 to 73. So as 72 becomes 73, Paul starts working towards his next record, Red Rose Speedway, and he releases some singles in between. We'll come to the singles in a second, but Red Rose Speedway, an album you like or not like? Try and go back to before this reissue.
Yes.
Okay.
This is an album I've always thought was a pretty good album.
Okay. Because I think now we're on opposite sides of the fence, because I loathed Red Rose Speedway. And we're not just saying this for podcast dynamism. And again, it's to do with when you hear something and how you hear something. But Red Rose Speedway was the first of a clutch of McCartney albums that I got as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I'd just been a big Beatles fan. And I was on holidays and there was a shop selling four McCartney albums in a little fake box set bundle. And they were McCartney 1, Ram, Red Rose Speedway and McCartney 2. And they were on CD and I bought them. And I didn't like any of them. And Red Rose Speedway in particular, I just thought was the biggest, awfulest mess. I just couldn't figure out. I guess it's to do with that thing we've talked about earlier, which is that, you know, Paul, if you're coming to McCartney solo expecting it to be Beatles, it's not. It's a different thing.
And what were you listening to McCartney wise at the time?
I'd just bought Flowers in the Dirt had come out.
Okay.
And so I was a big Beatles head. Flowers in the Dirt had come out and I really like Flowers in the Dirt. And I thought, well, I better get all of Paul's solo albums. And I bought these four albums in one spin and I couldn't get my head around any of them. But particularly Red Rose Speedway. And I thought its cover was stupid and I just didn't like it. And I thought this makes... And I also think, I don't think solo Paul is great music for teenagers. It's because it's, you know, you got, like, I remember when I first heard Sea Moon and those kind of things, they're kind of twee and they're kind of like, I love those songs now.
I think, McCartney from that early 70s period veers between the kid stuff.
Yeah.
On the one side, like Sea Moon.
Yeah.
And the sort of adult,
yeah,
stuff like My Love.
Yes.
So he's, you know, he's into his 30s at this stage, or he's just turned 30. The whole of kind of that 60s rock generation and the fans are the same age, and there's they're not teeny boppers anymore. They're not mop tops. It's not a teenage audience. The audience is growing. So there's a bit of a struggle from people who come out of that era. I think, well, what do grown-ups listen to? How do we tailor our output, whereas you don't get that from the people that came slightly later in the 60s, people like James Taylor, Carole King. They're already writing for their own generation. The 60s guys, McCartney in particular, perhaps slightly struggling. Where should I pitch this?
Yeah.
And there is a sort of schizophrenic side to what's going on, I think, in 72, 73.
Yeah. And I think, like, certainly from my perspective years ago as a teenager, you know, solo John makes a lot more sense. He's angry and he's on his own and he's telling you how he feels. And I don't believe in Jesus. How about that?
Yeah.
And he's really kind of going for it. And Paul's kind of singing about his wife and his wife is singing with him. And you're going, oh my God, I can't. This means nothing to me.
There's nothing to relate to.
Yes. Whereas now that I'm older and, you know, you're kind of like, okay, songs about wives and kids. I get it. I'm cool. Okay, let's take that out. So In the same way that I got Wildlife at a good time in my life, I probably didn't get Red Rose Speedway or didn't approach it at a good time in my life. But it is, it's also a bit of a mess, the original Red Rose Speedway, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I think it's, again, it's the tone. There isn't the kind of consistency. So it veers between cutesy little piano ballads and sort of lush orchestrated tracks to kind of slightly odd, proggy instrumental track on there. So again, yeah, it sounds like it's been stuck together from different sessions and different you know, orchestrators.
And and it had a long lead-in time. So it eventually came out on the 30th of April, 73 in the US and the 4th of May, 73 in the UK. And it was in gestation for a lot of 72 and early 73. And that's an 18-month gap between Red Rose Speedway and the preceding album Wildlife, which is the longest gap I think he'd had in his career at that point. Which is a long thing. So it's possibly overthought. And famously, Glyn Johns on the session said that they were stoned.
Yeah, I think
very efficient.
I think it's interesting that Glyn Johns makes an appearance. He's sort of, again, famously the guy that was charged with pulling together the Get Back session. So Glyn Johns comes in as the producer. So Paul has decided, going to work with a producer, going to hand this over to a producer. I think he lasted 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And he walked off.
Yeah.
So this is a guy, you know, you'd think people would be falling over themselves to work with Paul McCartney. He lasts 4 weeks and I think says in an interview somewhere, you know, if you want to come in, get stoned, mess about, jam, play, well, that's fine, but I'm not going to hang around and waste my time recording it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that seems to be indicative of the way McCartney's working during this period. It's a very kind of, shall we say, laid back vibe.
That's very diplomatic.
They're kind of turning up in working up arrangements in barns and smoke-filled rooms. You know, then once they've got this material laid down, it'd be interesting. Again, he's still reworking songs from the Ram era.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder why wasn't he using those previously?
Yeah.
He's drawing on a lot of disparate material, I think.
And so what I would say now is that, you know, Red Rose Speedway is you know, another one of these massive archive editions. And I would now feel that it's possibly the best archive edition. And it has totally reframed my feeling about the album. And one of the things it has done is it has given us a version of the double album. So Red Rose Speedway was supposed to be a double album in theory originally in 72, 73. And it got whittled down to a single album. And now as part of this reissue, there is a double album version of Red Rose Speedway. And I think the double album is sensational. And it makes me think of what could have been possible if the double album had come out in early 73 instead of this kind of swittled down single album silly cover, with just Paul on the cover, no room for any other member of Wings.
That's, I remember whenever I was a teenager coming across the NME Encyclopedia of Rock, and that was their one line review, was too bad there was only room for Paul on the cover. The double album, I like the idea of a double album. I don't like the sequencing of the double album. I think, I don't know whether that is the original sequencing. There seems to have been several versions of
there
the,
is a
of
couple
the
of sequencings,
order.
But according for this reissue, this, because the labels that they reproduced on the double album are from acetates that were in Denny Sewell's possession as a final working version of the double album.
I don't know that the double album holds together any better than the single album in the sense that it's got this kind of mishmash of sounds and things that I think probably quite properly ended up on as B-sides. There's a couple of live tracks into the mix. Again, it's that slightly schizophrenic. I think a resequencing might have helped.
Yeah. I mean, it's odd. I mean, you know, it's unusual that an album, a lot of people talk about, say, the White Album. Oh, if that should have been a single album. And then you get into that parlor game of, well, what's on your single version of the White Album and what would you cut out? It's odd that things go the other way around and an album that I don't like, once it's much longer, gets much better.
I think the problem with the single version is they kind of cut all the
good songs.
All the kind of harder harder edged songs, the kind of rock songs, the blues stuff, all got excised in favor of the slightly blander, middle of the road, adult contemporary.
Yes.
You know, My Love is the template. That was the big single.
Yes.
And I think EMI thought, right, we just need to appeal to that audience. And it's back to this sort of, you know, adult oriented rock.
Yeah.
And that was what the record label wanted. Whereas he's working with guys, you know, Henry McCulloch, he's a blues guitarist.
Mm.
He's a rock guitarist. He's ex Joe Cocker,
yeah.
Grease Band. He played at Woodstock. You know, this is a guy with serious sort of rock credentials, adds the harder edge, and most of that is just taken away.
Yeah.
I could see there an argument for there being two single albums.
Yeah.
Where you had a kind of a rock album and the adult contemporary. But I think mashing it together as a double,
because the double album version that's now in circulation, and it works great on vinyl. I kind of just see it as four sides, four EPs. There's kind of like an introductory EP, then there's kind of the second EP has got, you know, Jenny's song and Linda's song, then the fourth EP has got the experimental stuff, Loop and the medley, and then the final EP is a bit kind of personal, Paul. And I think it kind of works as this kind of four EP.
Yeah, version. but I think that's for me, that's the problem.
Oh,
that
okay.
You've got four distinct sides, or four distinct kind of aspects to this. So there isn't actually a flow. You can listen to the first four or five tracks and that's great. And then you can have a pause, turn it over, listen to the next four or five, and there's no connection, I think, between.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you kind of work on resequencing, you can kind of almost kind of build an arc or a narrative into the album.
I feel a Spotify playlist coming on.
I think we could put a Spotify playlist up there and let the people decide.
Let the people think. Well, let's talk about My Love for a second, because My Love, as you say, was a big hit. It
came out in everybody's favourite song.
Oh, Jesus. It came out on the 23rd of March, 73 in the UK, and the 9th of April, 73 in the US, and it made it to number one in the USA for 4 weeks in June 1973. Do you know who knocked it off number one?
Who knocked it off number
George
one?
George Harrison with Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth. George still sticking it to Paul.
Yeah.
Do you know who knocked George off number one? Billy Preston.
Isn't that nice?
So it was still a Beatle universe in 1972. Do you like My Love?
This is a song that I have grown to dislike.
Oh, okay. Because I've always disliked it.
Well, we've kind of switched. Do you want to swap seats here? This is a song that I never thought of it as being anything other than a great big soppy Paul McCartney ballad. It is what it is. And then I read
Rob Sheffield's Dreaming book, the Beatles, which gets a mention in every podcast.
And then I thought, this is the worst song ever.
Yeah. I think he really nails this notion that, particularly if you put it up alongside something, that Paul just can't deliver something. And it's interesting that there hasn't really been a true big Paul McCartney love song. We kind of think of him as being a balladeer or a love song, but there's no real Paul McCartney love songs at the end of the Beatles. And there's, you know, he starts to introduce them again with Maybe I'm Amazed and Lovely Linda, but it's almost like a motor he's trying to get started again.
And this is Sheffield says this is a song, My Love is a song that was kind of kicking around in embryonic form from about 1969. And his theory is this is a direct attempt by Paul to write something.
Well, it's interesting because on the Wildlife box, they have this footage from February 72 and they're actually performing Wild Love, or they're performing My Love.
Yes.
Wild Love. That's a good song.
An unreleased classic.
Sounds like a Depeche Mode number. Anyway, and so they're performing My Love, and this is over a year before it comes out. And I'm like, is he sitting on that because he thinks this is a big hit and I'm going to turn this into a hit? Because, you know, in the lead up to Red Rose Speedway coming out in 1973, he puts out, let's walk through these singles, shall we?
Yep.
So after Give Ireland Back to the Irish, he puts out the second Wings single, which is Mary Had a Little Lamb. Comments?
I think silence there. I mean, there's a lot of debate about it. Is this a reaction to the BBC banning Give Ireland Back to the Irish, where he just sort of thought, well, I'll just go completely in the opposite direction, or is this him genuinely trying to write a kid song because, hey, he's got kids and
he's got a kid called Mary,
and that's you know, I mean, by all means, you know, play the song.
Yeah,
does it have to be a single? You know, it could be a B-side, it could be a, so you've got this slightly odd scenario where Henry McCulloch, as I say, this kind of hard rocking blues guy from Northern Ireland, is on Top of the Pops and the Basil Brush Show miming miming to Mary Had a Little Lamb.
It's odd. Like, Mary Has a Little Lamb comes out in May 72. And if you look it up on Wikipedia, it labels the genre as children's music. It doesn't really say anything else.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Red Rose Speedway, the bonus disc in the box, it kind of starts with these singles as a run up to the album. So it opens with Mary Had a Little Lamb. And it's it doesn't need to exist. It's got a couple of interesting things. It has a what's called the trucker's gear shift. You know this thing? The key change. When a song goes up a key change.
Yeah.
And Macca doesn't do that much. And it's a bit of a lazy songwriting trick to sort of go up a key
change.
Come on, pay attention, everyone. It does plod. It's dull.
It's a very, very, I mean, apart from being twee, it's dull, which is probably its biggest crime.
Yeah. And it also has that lift from Pink Floyd's Echoes.
Yes.
That bit, you know, which is, you know, there's another Pink Floyd reference later on, I think. But the other thing I realise is that there's a blues song called Mary Had a Little Lamb. Buddy Guy wrote it and Stevie Ray Vaughan sang it, and they don't get opprobrium and hate mail for it.
But they weren't dressing up in Edwardian costumes appearing on. The video is just beyond tragic.
There are four videos
on
the DVD for Mary Had a Little Lamb, and I have watched them all back to back, and that was enough. Then the next single they put out is High, 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 which is proto-glam, 1972. Now we're talking.
Yeah, but we're kind of now swinging back in the opposite direction from Mary Had a Little Lamb. And again, a song banned by the BBC.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we go into the B-side of that is Sea Moon. So we've got Sea Moon as well to enjoy.
Yeah, which I suppose is a kind of kid song again.
But yeah.
It's an interesting kind of little reggae lilt, not much to it.
Yeah, it's a song, as I said, it's a song I didn't really like. Now I kind of like it because it's just got that, you kind of appreciate how it's recorded. It's got that nice vibe where he's just obviously enjoying a herbal moment with his wife.
They're in a smoke-filled room.
Yes, and he's just taking it easy and it just sort of chugs along in a very pleasant way. And that comes out in December 72. And then that's the run into My Love, which then launches Red Rose Speedway. What I find odd about Red Rose Speedway is, though, that when they cut it from the double to the single, they kept in like loop.
Yeah.
And they kept in the medley I find wanting.
The medley that closes the album is, you know, it's obviously his attempt to go back to revisit Abbey Road, the long medley. And what he's done is he's taken four songs that kind of run into each other. And then as a final, he's sort of overlaying the melody from each of the four. And it's very contrived. It doesn't really work. Abbey Road has a sort of flow to it, which is ironic because it was made up of independently kind of written songs but yet it has there's a sort of ease to that.
Yeah.
This just comes across as being very contrived.
As a side point, in the box set, you know, there's all these little bits of lyrics and pictures and all the rest. And one of the songs in that medley is a song called Hold Me Tight.
Hold Me Tight, yeah.
And there is a Beatles song called Hold Me Tight. And if you look, and I don't know how this got past quality control, but if you look in the Red Rose Speedway box, the reproduced lyric sheet for Hold Me Tight is the Beatles song, Hold Me Tight. And it's reproduced on a letter from 1963, a bit of Beatles fan mail. And it's odd because it's got nothing to do with anything.
This is why they need two people to come in and do quality control.
Two people, exactly.
Two people. It's a two-man job.
It is a two-man
job.
And, you know, we do shift work and we try and get that archive under control. But if people have bought that Red Rose Speedway box and you haven't gone through all the paperwork, there's a bonus bit of Beatles memorabilia being stuck inside. Loop, First Indian on the Moon, I think, is another Pink Floyd.
That's a shocking. It's a shockingly bad, you know, borderline racist.
Oh, yeah. There's no borderline.
There's no borderline. It's across the line. The borderline is in the
You might as well be eating a Hiawatha ice cream. Yeah.
This might have been acceptable in the early 70s. Yes. But even then.
Yeah, it has. There's a couple of odd moments. It just seems like an odd thing to save for the single album.
Is you know, given that if you're Paul McCartney,
yes,
you would think if you told your record company you wanted to put out a double album, your record company would put out a double album.
Yeah, you kind of think he'd put his foot down.
So the question is, did he choose this? Is this his, you know, if he's prepared to concede the point, okay, look, fine, you know, you can slash this and
Yeah.
By 50%, you can take 50% of these tracks and just throw them away, or we put archive them for release at great expense 30 or 40 years from now. But did he choose these songs?
I don't know. I mean, he does this over and over again, doesn't he? Where he over-records and then stuff just gets put in the back burner.
And he chooses the wrong song.
Yeah, pretty much.
Again, he needs somebody there telling him.
Exactly. Executive
producers.
But I think in terms of the double album, do you not think, you were talking about how there's different vibes, do you not think the double album gives it a one-man white album kind of vibe?
I think so. I think you're probably making a fair point, but it's the sequencing.
Yes.
I don't think it's any coincidence that the longest Beatles session ever was 24 hours to sequence the white album. And I think it's that care and attention that makes the white album what it is. I think if this album was resequenced, it would probably be better. I mean, Night Out, it's effectively an instrumental.
Yes.
Where they yell Night Out.
Yeah.
And you think, is this the way to open the album?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well.
I have to admit, Night Out is a song that wasn't on my radar until those chaps from the Take It Away podcast were doing Red Rose Speedway a while back, and they played Night Out, and I was like, where is this? And I dug it out, and a fellow on the internet sent it to me on CD, and I think to hear it in full crystalline glory, I think Night Out is particularly if you think of it's 72, it's peak glam rock.
Yeah.
It stomps onto the record at the start, and you're like, it wakes you up. It's much better than Big Barn Bed as an opener.
I don't disagree with anything you say about the track. It's a great track. It sounds amazing.
Yes,
but it shouldn't be the opening track.
What should be the opening track?
Well, I like Big Barn Bed. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Again, it's all about the sequencing. I think there's a sort of a narrative arc that you could construct.
Yes.
And I will go on. I will go on to Spotify and I will create the list.
Your people demand that you do this.
Thank you for asking. It seems to me that there is a kind of an arc of a relationship.
Yeah.
Story to be told across those albums. So I will put together that playlist.
Okay.
And we can. You're not convinced.
No, I am. I am convinced. We're kind of going all over the place. There's one other thing I've made a note about is the odd voice he uses on Little Lamb Dragonfly.
Yeah.
You know that thing?
That thing that
comes out of the blue.
Are we gonna keep that in?
I think we should. We can cut to maybe a tiny snippet of Paul.
Another two songs stuck together.
Yeah.
And again, this is what I'd say is it's kind of characteristic of Paul in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of little snippets of songs, there's the Herbally Refreshed, sticking things together, Admiral Halsey, Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey, even Big Barn Bed has a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a song that I
but I didn't appreciate until this box came out that George Martin had a hand in it at all. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. But again, I think, George Martin is on RAM. He's doing some string arrangements on RAM.
Yeah.
And I think, again, some of these songs date from those
RAM
sessions.
Times. Yeah, yeah. Certainly get on the right thing.
My favorite song?
Yeah.
Single Pigeon.
Well, Single Pigeon is extraordinarily Beatly, isn't it?
Yes.
It could have been on the White Album.
It sounds like it dropped off the White Album.
Yeah, it sticks out in a good way.
Yeah.
And it's very short and sweet, and the brass band. Yeah, it's got the DNA of all that kind of white album.
And I always wonder, was that a sort of conscious, you know, there's a kind of Martha My Dear vibe to that. But that I think is the lost gem.
Yeah, that is a gem. And if you go onto the bonus disc, it has all those singles that we mentioned. And then the single that came out after Red Rose Speedway, which is Live and Let Die. Everyone loves Live and Let
That's
Die,
a great
right?
song.
Yeah, there's nothing. But I think what you forget, because there's Live and Let Die and there's a demo rough take of Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
When you listen to the rough take, which is fantastic, and it's hard to believe he's singing live all the time on every take. I mean, reckon his voice for the 21st century, but still going for it, you know. But you listen to that demo version, you think, Live and Let Die, what an odd song. It's like, oh yeah, I've got a song, it's got a chorus, it's got a verse, and then it's going to go reggae, and then it's going to explode, then it's going to go back to the reggae. You're like, you're out of your mind.
But I think Linda wrote the little reggae
Apparently
section.
So, yeah.
So she has a kind of fascination for reggae and...
Well, Seaside Woman, I think, is like Tom Tom Club in 1972. That's kind of what it reminds me of when it pops up on the long album.
That is a great song.
Yeah.
I remember buying that as a single on yellow vinyl.
Ah.
That's my retirement fund.
But the video has become retrospectively horrendously racist. Yes,
yeah.
We can't enjoy the video.
No, we're not allowed
to. And we're going
to
move swiftly on. The other things that you have on the bonus disc is 1882, which is a song I love. It's crazy.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
It's a great song. But it's nuts.
Oh, it is nuts. And it's just him telling this odd story. And you can actually sense from the demo, there's not a whole lot of demos in the McCartney Archive collection.
No.
But when they come out, you kind of get this sense with Paul that he writes songs and he's obviously hearing the record.
Yes.
And
he's
1882, you can just hear him trying to play it as if it's going to be done live. And it's such a mad story of a boy and a master and stealing bread. And you're like, you're just crazy.
Again, smoke-filled room.
Smoke-filled room. And then, The Little Lamb Dragonfly, there's an alternate take on that, which still has a bit of strange, wordless vocals on it. I think I'd have liked an instrumental version of Little Lamb Dragonfly.
It's a very pretty song.
Yeah, that's where the fun is.
And it's about an actual lamb.
Yes,
so
dying on his farm.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's very sad.
He keeps it real, doesn't he? So then you move on to the DVD. So the DVD has, apart from four videos for Mary Has a Little Lamb and videos for Hi, Hi, Hi and Sea Moon and all the rest, it has probably the highlight of everything, James Paul McCartney,
yes.
The TV special.
Yes.
For a guy who is trying to sell himself as being hiding in a band called Wings, it seems odd that the first big statement he would make on television is a special called James Paul McCartney.
Similar to having only him on the front of the
yes.
album. The story of James Paul McCartney is, of course, this was a settlement deal with ATV Music, who were claiming publishing.
Yeah.
So what McCartney was doing at this stage was having Linda co-write all the songs so that at least 50% of the songwriting publishing was going to the McCartney household to pay the bills.
Yes.
Rather than perpetuate this, there was an agreement if he would do this TV special for ATV, all would be well and everybody would make up, kiss and be friendly. And it's a terrible show. I don't know how it was perceived by the people sitting at home. There are one or two...
Oh, it's perceived as a terrible show.
Yeah, one or two interesting little bits.
Yeah.
The Big Barn Bed, which opens
where
they're all performing in front of...
Bank of televisions.
Yeah, it looks as though it's going to be a live shot and then they're performing in front of televisions. That's a kind of pretty far ahead of its time concept. There's some cutesy little acoustic numbers where Linda's kind of...
Yeah, taking pictures.
Taking pictures. Yeah. And again, just Paul... there, but some of it is just beyond embarrassing.
Some of it is beyond embarrassing, and I guess these things were made not to be still actively watched many years later, because it was designed to be shown once and then disappear. And I'd seen it on YouTube, but that was the first time I sat down and watched the whole thing from start to finish. And it does feel, you know, that bit in the Let It Be movie where Paul is trying to describe how the cameras should move in, and he's sort of you get that sense that he's doing the same thing for this thing, and there's going to be a bank of televisions and the people will be the audience. Oh Jesus. So and it kind of sometimes works, but yeah, there's the bit that he's famously chided for is the gotta sing, gotta dance yes. medley bit. But it does have its moments. I like the performance of Live and Let Die, where the piano explodes.
That's good. That's good. That. That's good.
And that's it.
Yeah. Well, you've got the pub where he kind of in the pub in Liverpool.
The pub bit is very
chappy.
Yes, and that's kind of selling this notion of himself as this man of the people, and he loves his family. And
they look so
around.
Uncomfortable.
I know, and he looks. I mean, it's this kind of Paul denial that he uses again and again, where he's kind of sitting in the pub with everyone else, and everyone's like, "It's Paul McCartney.
It's Paul
McCartney. Can't not be.
Yeah, you can't Paul McCartney. You can't be normal in the presence of Paul McCartney."
But it is kind of it's still a sweet thing that it exists.
And the vox pop where they stop people in the streets and they get some gent in a bowler hat
to sing songs
and.
But it is interesting as it is the first time that he starts doing Beatles songs. There are Beatles songs in this. Now,
I don't know
if that's a cop to the Lou Grade ATV music. Agreement that he had.
Yeah,
to
I always assumed it was part of the deal, part of the settlement.
But the show ends with him singing Yesterday, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bit odd for, again, a guy trying to set himself up as a new band, separate entity, all the rest. And it had to be a bit tough for some of the people involved to, Henry McCullough putting on the old Mary Had a Little Lamb costume and standing by the river.
Yeah, it's... But this is where the whole notion of it being a band starts to break down.
Yes,
you know, we've had the tour, we've had the, it's Wings. It's not Paul McCartney and Wings, except now it is Paul McCartney and Wings, and Red Rose Speedway is billed as Paul McCartney and Wings.
Yeah,
whereas the previous album was Wings Wildlife.
Yeah,
so there's an acknowledgement. Paul is on the album. The TV special is all about Paul. So if the guys in the band ever had any pretension that this was a band, this is where it starts to kind of disintegrate.
Yeah. But certainly in terms of this box set, it's a nice thing to have. It's a very decent document of the times, and this is
in terms of the cover, the packaging, the content, I think this is up there with the best of the archive release.
Yeah, I think it certainly helps. You know, if the job is to make somebody like an album who didn't like it before, or rate an album who didn't rate it before, there's a lot going on in this box set inside. And again, for both boxes, we've talked about this, you know, about other times before, there's two great books there to read.
Yep.
I think oftentimes in box sets, you know, there's almost a ratio where the amount of reading needs to at least last longer than it takes to listen to the records. And there's a good chunk of reading in all these boxes. But there's something we haven't mentioned yet, Stephen. There's one extra thing. It's almost like one of these deals.
Are we not out of time?
We're not out of time. Call off that cab. This is like one of those, but we're not done yet. Like, I'm going to sell you an extra 3 knives on top of the 5 knives you've already bought. There's something else in the Red Rose Speedway box.
What's in the box? Tell us, Jason.
It's like the movie Seven.
What is in the box?
What's in the box?
Don't open the box.
You should open the box because the last thing is, and it's almost superfluous to requirements.
It's definitely superfluous to requirements.
The Bruce McMouse show.
You see, you really want to say Bruce McMouse, don't
Bruce,
you?
Yeah, you do actually. Yeah. Or Bryce McMouse.
Bryce McMouse.
But the Bruce McMouse show, and this is something. Unlike the James Paul McCartney special that was suppressed at the time, probably because it made children cry.
Yeah. I think it made the band cry.
Yes, but has been now lovingly restored. And so most of these McCartney sets, they've got 3 CDs and a DVD, and Red Rose Speedway has that, but it also has a bonus CD and Blu-ray of the Bruce McMouse show, which is a great thing.
I did watch it. It was very interesting for about 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay. It's frustrating because when it's good, it's really good.
Yeah, but it's just... I started to watch it and it's... what we got really, the conceit here is it's Wings in a theatre playing a live show and there are mice, cartoon mice living under the stage. living under the stage and in some way being kind of disturbed by this concert that's playing. Or,
well, it would disturb
it
you.
It would disturb
if you.
If
you're a cartoon mess.
Yeah. And it's a mixture of live action and cartoon. Now, I have to say, for the time, it was probably technically you know, very difficult. It was probably very impressive.
Yes.
But, you know, there's no story.
No.
And the continuity is appalling.
It's terrible.
There's not even a pretense. So in the middle of a song, Paul McCartney's hair gets longer, gets shorter, his shirt changes from blue to black.
Yeah.
It's shockingly bad.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm probably being very vague, but there was a vogue kind of in the 70s of concert films being made of bands that would be shown as features.
Yes, yes,
pre-theatre features in cinemas.
Yeah.
I remember once, for some bizarre reason, seeing a Status Quo one of some gig.
I remember seeing Elton John in Russia, which in my head was a trailer for Live and Let Die.
Yeah. But these were a thing, and maybe they were angling for that market. And it would be nice to have had a proper concert movie of a 1972 Wings concert.
The footage must exist.
Yes.
Because clearly what they're performing on a soundstage, or maybe they're miming on a soundstage at one point, but then there is live concert footage. So presumably they recorded, judging by the hair changing mid-song, they must have recorded two or three complete gigs at one point.
And what's interesting is prior to the Red Rose Speedway box coming out, as I said, people kind of complained about the Flowers in the Dirt box. Give us all this stuff. There's stuff missing. What's going on? And Bruce McManus is something that people didn't really know. People weren't certain it existed last year.
No, it was a rumour. It had been mentioned. I think McCartney mentions it once or twice. You know, I think I've certainly heard Denny Lane being interviewed and saying, yeah, I remember having to stand and pretend there was a mouse standing in my hand and deliver lines to this imaginary. Yeah. But I certainly didn't know that it was a complete
film. I didn't
film.
Either. And that's why it's on Blu-ray, is that they obviously have the original film. They were able to put the sound in 5.1. So there's not a lot of, there's no 5.1 in these box sets. It's the first appearance of 5.1 surround sound. And they're able to do it in a high res kind of feature. So it looks fantastic. It sounds fantastic. And then it starts. And but it's really hard. Like it's hard to square the circle. And I'm McCartney defender number one of him wanting to be in this amazing hard rock band. And yet you're like, okay, you're in this hard rock spontaneous band. What are you going to do now? And then you watch the opening scene of Bruce McManus and he's like, hello, I'm going to tell you a story. There was this mouse under the stage one day. And you're like, oh my God.
It's this totally schizophrenic approach. And I say, this is where I think the other three Beatles have kind of settled into the notion that they are Beatles, ex-Beatles.
Yeah.
They're living the kind of superstar life. They're recording albums that you know Living in the Material World is a contemporary album by George Harrison. But McCartney is still, he wants to be in a band, but he wants to be on the front cover of the album. It's his way or no way. He wants to be in a hard rock band. He wants to write protest songs about Ireland. He wants to write Hi, 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 but he also does Mary Had a Little Lamb and Seamoon, and he has My Love, which is the kind of adult contemporary. He's going back to Single Pigeon, which is a kind of throwback to the White Album. He's just not settling in. He wants to be all of these things, but he ends up being none of these things.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of credibility gap sort of is possibly this is where it's stems from that he's always struggled with.
But the one person who was able to nail that down was Lennon. Because didn't he say in an interview, oh, I get Wings. It's like the Plastic Ono Band. It's Paul and whatever Paul says it is. It's a conceptual piece of work.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
And Lennon copped onto that really early.
But McCartney never did.
No.
He always sort of seemed to think, it's a band and we're all kind of buddies and we're all kind of on the tour bus and it's great.
Even at the end, Holly and Juba are being brought into interviews for Wings Mark III to try and figure out the direction of things. Yeah, it's quite weird.
But I think that's the whole thing about, you know, I have a lot of time for a lot of what McCartney did in his solo career. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm kind of joking around. I don't like some of the early stuff, but I think he struggles because he wants to be all things to all men.
Yeah.
So he wants to be the family entertainer. He wants to be the hard rocker. He wants to do the reggae. He wants to do the lush ballads. He wants to write the film music. He wants to be on a rap record with Kanye West. He wants, you know, that's, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And I think this is the start of that kind of credibility gap.
But again, it is that thing that it's nice now that we can just go back and pull out the bits we want to listen to or enjoy.
And I think it does go back to that point that you were making on the first part about, perhaps McCartney's solo career is best enjoyed in retrospect.
There is one or two things in Bruce McManus that I think are worth pointing out. I think the performance of Wildlife is very interesting. It's great because it has this kind of backdrop of people walking through. It reminds me of Floyd, Us like, and Them type
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. I did kind of wonder, had Paul been hanging out at Pink Floyd concerts? Because
well, there is a lot going on, because don't forget Paul was interviewed for Dark Side of the Moon to be a voice, and Henry McCullough is a voice on Dark Side of the Moon. So they are overlapping. There's a definite Floyd Wings overlap, and they're all hanging out in Abbey Road at the same time, 71, 72, 73. So there's certainly a vibe of that off it. And the other great songs are, it's nice to kind of see, it's funny to see Mumbo and Bitbop perform, but also The Mess.
Yes.
And I think one song that has come out of re-listening to all these boxes again is The Mess. It's another one of these McCartney songs, which if you actually stop and look at its parts, you're like, it's full of little stops and starts and ups and downs. And it doesn't really dawn on you initially what a strangely arranged piece of music it is.
But thrown away.
Oh, yeah. Like Lost for like on a B-side and never to be seen again.
The concert for that, I would really like a Wings Over Europe.
Yeah.
Like a Wings Over America or a rock show.
Yeah.
You know, a DVD or a Blu-ray of that performance. That, I think, was a missed opportunity. The footage must exist. I would guess it would be pretty easy to kind of polish that up for Blu-ray. Hmm. The backdrop, the wildlife backdrop and the images, that took me really by surprise.
Yeah, I was surprised at how high-tech it was.
Yes, I wasn't expecting 1970. I was still thinking this is going to be a carryover from the university 11 nights, we just kind of rock up doing a show, but it's for its time, it's quite a high-tech a concert experience,
and I suppose for those moments it is worthwhile, like compared to a year ago before these box sets came out, how little of this stuff we had to see in real life get to see it now, even if there is a cartoon mouse popping up now and then. Exactly.
I think I'm prepared to take the cartoon mouse as a trade-off for the live footage. But the thing about this box set, which just really raises it to one of the best in the archive, is the material, the availability, the wealth of unreleased material.
Yes.
You know, this was a double album. Some of these things have turned up on B-sides, but there's a huge wealth of unreleased material, or at least unfamiliar material.
Yeah, and it's there's a lot to kind of roll up your sleeves and get involved in and have a think about it. And I think, you know, I'd probably say if you're only going to buy one of the box sets, I think Red Rose Speedway has now become the one in front to try and for all the bits of it that we've disparaged and made fun of. It's a total adventure of this is what happened for this year. He did these gigs, he did this TV show, he made all these songs. They're all over the place, but
the other thing is the work rate for that year is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, what's there in that 12 months, 13, 14 month period?
Yeah, it's very impressive. Okay, well, once again, we hope we have managed to drive some people back to Red Rose Speedway, and we'll put links up to Stephen's proposed versions of Red Rose Speedway.
That was an unnecessary chuckle in the middle of that.
Because we're contactable on at BeatlesPod on Twitter and various other guises. But for now, I'm Jason Carty.
I'm Stephen Cockcroft.
This has been Nothing Is Real. We'll see you on the next time.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Is Real. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you did, why not become a member? You'll get access to ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more. Follow the link in the show notes, sign up on Acast Plus, or visit our website, nothingisrealpod.com.